the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're about to mark the 37th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade. And what makes this really fascinating is that now there is probably far more public conversation about that particular U.S. Supreme Court decision than there was even at the time. You know, the United States Supreme Court thought that it had put the issue of abortion to rest 37 years ago when it handed down the decision, now infamous, the decision known as Roe v. Wade. And we've really been tracking this for a long time. I can remember the first big anniversary that I participated in was the 20th anniversary in 1993 when I was a speaker at some of the events that were commemorating the 20th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And I can just tell you that at that time, 20 years after Roe v. Wade, there was what did not exist in 1973. There was a pro-life movement, an organized pro-life movement. I was there to speak at pro-life events. But there was the sense in 1993 that history was moving away from us rather than towards us on this issue. I can tell you that it is very different in the year 2010. Of all things, counterintuitively, surprisingly, it is the culture of abortion that is now in retreat 37 years after Roe v. Wade. And we're going to be talking today about why that is so. The cover story in the annual Roe v. Wade issue of World Magazine is entitled Pro Baby, 37 Years After Roe v. Wade, The Tide is Turning. Very interesting argument made by the magazine, an observation that's not unique. But on the other hand, it's significant for World to declare this kind of hopefulness on its cover. And I think there is good reason for us to think this through. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love for you to join the conversation. What are you thinking? Where do you see the tide moving on this? Is the tide coming in or going out on the issue of the sanctity of human life? In other words, do you think that America really is turning in a more pro-life direction? Now, you may remember that just a few weeks ago, I published a major article having to do with an argument made by a pro-choice advocate in New York Magazine that the nation is nowhere near as pro-choice as many pro-choicers or pro-abortionists had thought. And she talks about the Stupak Amendment passing the U.S. House of Representatives, but points to other things. She makes a comment, for instance, just catch this, that this is a generation of young people who are accustomed to seeing ultrasound images of their siblings taped to the refrigerator door. You can't tell them it's not a baby. The World Magazine article has a very interesting sub-theme to it, and that is basically that we have really seen, and we should be very, very thankful for this, a shift in the discussion from the fetus to the baby, because the fetus was a dehumanizing term that was used by people to try to suggest this isn't a baby. But, you know, increasingly, it's become almost impossible to deny this is a baby. Which way do you see the tide going? World Magazine expresses hopefulness here on the 37th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. It documents that with some articles we'll talk about in just a moment. And the other side is beginning to say some of the same things. Again, this article by Jennifer Senior that was published in New York Magazine, The Abortion Distortion, Just How Pro-Choice Is America Really. We're going to talk about all this on the Albert Mohler Program today. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Which way is the tide going? What do you see? What does it look like where you live, where you operate, on your college or university campus? What does it look like in your generation? What does it look like amongst your neighbors? Maybe you can track a shift in your own position on this as well. We're glad to hear from you by email. Write us at mail@albertmohler.com, at Facebook, The Albert Mohler Program, at Twitter, /Albert Mohler, or Mohler Radio. We'll get to that conversation in just a moment. First, a review of other issues in the news. Of course, all eyes are on Haiti today. And we're talking about now 1 week after that cataclysmic 7.0 earthquake, the 7.0 referring to the Richter scale. Very interesting analysis coming out, you know, demonstrating again that poverty has consequences because the nation of Haiti does not have the kind of building codes or the kind of engineering that would have prevented at least some of the destruction. A similar earthquake happening anywhere in the world would certainly have been a tragedy, but not a tragedy on this scale. The human tragedy on this is being compounded now in the aftermath of the earthquake and rescue efforts that have been underway. There are still some rescues taking place. Providentially, we need to be thankful for that because the climate of Haiti, relatively warm temperatures and air pockets in these buildings have meant that some people survived longer than might be the case in other areas of the world where earthquakes also happen with regularity. There are interesting controversies coming out of this. You've been seeing the scenes, the arrival of American paratroopers at the presidential palace, the national palace there in Port-au-Prince. Well, it led some people to say America is invading. You know, it's very interesting. You had Hugo Chavez of Venezuela and others who immediately jumped on that. You know, folks, this is where being the world's only superpower matters because you're the only people that can get boots on the ground to get the job done. And this is a situation in which President Obama and the American Armed Forces need not to be intimidated from doing what they need to do to save as many lives as possible. Speaking of saving lives, you've undoubtedly seen some of the footage coming out of children. The orphan crisis is now well documented within Haiti. Haiti had an orphan crisis before this tragedy. You can just imagine how that's going to be compounded now. There are also reports about people who are arriving in Haiti not to help but to hurt. And that's just really sad, a real sign of human depravity. The tragedy compounded by those who are coming to try to get people to be involved in sex trafficking as a way out of this tragedy. To take advantage of folks who are there suffering from the aftermath of this earthquake, you're really talking about a moral atrocity being compounded over and over again, as if we needed any further evidence of Genesis 3. Interesting things going on in the United States as well. Of course, the special election today in Massachusetts to elect the successor to fulfill a temporary term in the United States, a partial term in the United States Senate, the seat formerly held by the late Edward M. Kennedy. And what makes that race all the more interesting, of course, is that it is a real race. It's, of course, too early to call. The polls are still open, but Republican Scott Brown has been leading in the polls over Democrat Martha Coakley. And that race is going to have all kinds of political ramifications. It has a direct role to play in the health care legislation issue. It has a direct role to play in terms of the larger picture of the 2010 elections. And I guarantee you, when you turn on the talk shows tonight and the cable news networks, there's going to be a lot of talk about that Massachusetts election, and for good reason. It really does matter. But that assumes, of course, you're going to be turning on your television tonight. One of the big stories, of course, out there, paling in significance to anything having to do with the earthquake, but nonetheless, something that's on the American radar screen is what's going on at NBC in terms of late-night entertainment. Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno, the shake-up, the shuffle, you know how that's working out. Interestingly, the big picture is that so many fewer people are watching anyway. At the New York Times, David Carr, writing the Media Equation column, talks about the fact that he and his daughter were looking at the opening dialogues of both Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien. They've been putting out a lot of pretty funny material just in terms of the context of this shakeup at NBC. He writes this, but even though the late-night fratricide has resulted in some must-see moments, I should point out that we were nowhere near a television. We were at the kitchen table, daughter on a Mac, dad on a PC, both of us using broadband to pick and choose a greatest hits version of The Meltdown, which is sort of the problem. In other words, the general, larger picture of ratings for late-night television is a much smaller picture than it was at one time. And whether NBC is doing something that will aid it in the ratings or not, I don't know. But I will tell you this. What is becoming revealed in all of this is that there's a migration from old media to new media in so many different forms. And in this case, you've got the Media Equation columnist for the New York Times and his daughter watching television, but not on television. And here's the kicker. An interesting follow-up to this revealed that many of the young people writing on the Conan O'Brien show don't even own televisions. And their major figures in producing a television show. Folks, as you're thinking about changes in terms of the media equation and technology, I don't know. I just found that a very interesting dimension to all of this. I don't know where NBC is going to land. And frankly, that's not my first concern. But I am interested in what it says about where Americans are watching and viewing and listening and how these changes in media usage habits reveal larger changes in the American population. You know, from a Christian looking at this, it tells us that our mission field is mobile. We're trying to talk to people. I'm glad to be talking to you by radio. But you know, there are folks all over the place who have all kinds of options they never had in the past. But I am thankful that this remains a very viable medium for conversation. And we find out you're right there because you call. Give me a call to join the conversation. How is the tide turning, or is it turning, on abortion? Is America becoming a more or a less pro-life nation? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're asking a very important question today. Is America becoming a more pro-life nation? Is the tide turning on this issue? We're talking 37 years. That's right, almost four decades after the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the infamous Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion on demand in 1973. The Supreme Court thought that it had shut the door on the issue. It had settled the issue. America would settle back after some initial controversy and say, all right, this is the law, we're going to live with it. Not hardly. As a matter of fact, we have seen a vigorous pro-life movement emerge in the years immediately after Roe v. Wade. And now we are beginning to see that the American mind is at least moving in some very interesting directions. There are reasons for that. One of those reasons is the very existence of the ultrasound. The especially advanced imaging systems, especially the 3 and 4D, that are showing the baby. And then we have the pictures inside the womb. Those didn't exist in 1973. You have these micro cameras that are able to go inside and actually watch fetal development. You know, folks, the reality is that Americans are going to side with the baby. That's key. And once we make clear that what is in the mother's womb is a baby, the entire equation changes. It's not a simple thing, though, to say that the tide's moving in one direction or the other. It's a complex picture. That's why we're talking about it. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. To join us, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Thompsontown, Pennsylvania. Michelle's listening on WQJU. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi. I think it's turning towards pro-life, because if a woman is murdered and she is pregnant, the person can be charged with two deaths, the mother and the baby.
Michelle, that's a very interesting point. And, of course, there have been some very well-publicized murder trials having to do with the man who kills a mother and a child and is arrested not for, that is, an unborn child, and is arrested not for one murder but for two. Very famous case out of California that has really transformed, at least in the minds of many, the whole equation. You know, Michelle, you brought up something that's not even in this article, but I think you're exactly right. Because after all, what you're talking about here is a homicide of an unborn human being. And I think that is entirely not only legally, but morally appropriate and mandated. But if indeed it is homicide to kill that baby in his mother's womb, then what's the moral distinction between doing it not with a bullet as a matter of killing the mother, but rather with a saline injection or a knife blade, saying you're doing it because of the woman's choice? That just doesn't make any sense. I don't think Americans see that as sensical. Very good point, Michelle. I really appreciate you adding that to the discussion. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of law. The law is in such an awkward position right now because it says, according to the Supreme Court decision of 73, it's murder over here and not murder over there. And that makes no sense for good reason. It's insane. Let's go to Ruth calling from Traverse City, Michigan, listening on WLJN. Go ahead, Ruth.
Hello. Unfortunately, I see people being viewed as not having worth with the promotion of evolution. I just went back to college, and it's brought forward as fact. Not a moment is it mentioned that this is a theory. When we got to genetics, he mentioned that we are a chance, he very emphasized dramatically that we are, by chance, maybe 1 in 33,000 because of all the different things that could happen at the cellular level.
Yeah.
And because of that theory is being promoted, people think that they have no value. They're just blobs that evolved.
You know, Ruth, I really appreciate your call. This is great worldview analysis, and you've added something really important here because worldviews matter. Indeed, worldviews are determinative unless they're corrected by reality and truth, because all you have here is the evolutionary worldview, which implies exactly what you say it implies, Ruth. Of course it does. If you really take naturalistic evolution at even a minimal level of intellectual honesty, it means that not only our lives, not only my life and your life, but every single life that's ever lived is just an accident. It means that the existence of matter and energy are mere accidents. The cosmos itself and all of its abundance, all of its flourishing, all of its wonder and complexity, accident. And the reality is that it's hard to conjure up a whole lot of meaning to an accidental life. But let me tell you, you know, Ruth, there's bad news and there's good news. The bad news is it's as bad as you think. And what we're seeing, especially among the intellectual elites, who are the people who give themselves most eagerly to the theory of evolution, they're the most likely to say that they accept evolution, they accept a naturalistic viewpoint, they're basically secularized in their thinking. They are the people who are teaching, that's the bad news, in the colleges and universities in the main. But let me give you the good news, Ruth, and I hope this encourages you some, and you say you've just come back to college, God bless you. I honestly believe that as much as I am offended by and concerned by what these professors are teaching, I don't think the average student is picking up on it the way the professor intends. The evolutionists are losing the argument on the ground, and they know it. That's what's driving them crazy. That's why you have Richard Dawkins writing the books he's writing. That's why you have Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times saying that well over 70% of Americans reject the theory of evolution. And he says, I'm sure I want to live in a country like that. He wrote an article that I cited sometime back in which he said, far more Americans believe in the virgin birth of Christ than in evolution. And he sees that as exactly backwards. And so the good news is that most people when they look in the mirror do not see an accident. They just can't in their soul, in their mind, really believe that they are an accident. I believe that's a knowledge that's implanted in them by the Creator because he's made every single human being in his image. And I think if we're really honest, we know we're not an accident. And so, Ruth, that's the good news. Here's a little bit more good news. The younger you go, the less likely you are to believe in evolution in terms of young people. So children, for instance, I also wrote about this on my website. Scientific report coming out, driving the evolutionists crazy. Why is it that children appear, here's the word they use for it, hardwired to reject evolution? It's because they know that they see two blocks together, one on top of the other, somebody did it. They know, using the old parable, if there's a turtle sitting on top of a fence post, somebody put him there. And they do not believe, when they look at the world, that it's an accident. That's why it's so easy for a little child to sing, "Oh, who can make a rainbow? I know I can't, can you? Oh, who can make a rainbow? I know it's God. It's true." And that's the reality. That's just kind of the way it works. Ruth, thank you so much for your call. We've had two contrary views who have added a lot to the discussion. Is the tide coming in or going out? Is America becoming a more pro-life nation? We've had two good arguments made. One hasn't been on the table before, and I appreciate that, about the fact that we now have prenatal homicide recognized, especially when it comes to killing a mother who turns out to be pregnant. You have several jurisdictions in which that very quickly turns into a double homicide. What's the rationality if that same woman could have gone and aborted her baby right around the corner? Obviously, that's legal insanity, and the very recognition of that's an advance. And yet we also have Ruth calling to say, look, the evolutionary worldview has consequences, and she's absolutely right. And amongst those, just listen carefully and consider this, amongst those who accept a naturalistic, materialistic, evolutionary view of life, why not kill the accident within you if you're just yourself an accident? Well, the reality is we have to hope that even those people who say they believe that in their hearts really don't. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Is the tide coming in or is the tide going out? Very interestingly, good metaphor here. World Magazine's cover story, the annual Roe v. Wade anniversary cover story, it's dated January 10, 2010, shows a bunch of baskets with babies in them floating, as if it is a tide. Pro-baby, says the headline. 37 years after Roe v. Wade, the tide is turning. And Marvin Olasky wrote the very fine cover story for World Magazine on this issue, and there are several other dimensions in the magazine, features related to this. I'll tell you, here's a big part of it. What we're talking about here is the fact that Americans are increasingly in a position where they cannot deny this is a baby, an unborn baby, an unborn human being. And there is the direct link to the fact that they were once themselves an unborn human being. That's what's really interesting. I love the reference to the fact that this is a generation that's grown up with the ultrasound pictures, the images taped right to the refrigerator. This is a generation that has seen their siblings before they were born and has come to know them, and you can't tell them that's not a baby. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The turning tide has produced some very interesting things. Here's one, the Stupak Amendment that passed the United States House of Representatives. You talk about counterintuitive. Here you have a majority of Democrats in the House, a party officially committed to a pro-life position, and of all things, you had a Democrat produce this particular amendment and a Democratic majority instrumental in passing it. And all of a sudden now, you've had what many people, especially in the pro-abortion movement, think is the most restrictive law on abortion since Roe v. Wade 1973, adopted by a Democratic House with Nancy Pelosi as the speaker. She didn't vote for it. She didn't want it, but she's got it. That's one thing. Here are some other things. The partial birth abortion ban, the popularity amongst Americans of the ban on partial birth abortions has been hugely influential. It's more than a signal. It's a substantial advance for the cause of human life. It's not enough, but it's a substantial advance. Here's another. When you just start thinking about the way Americans think, when you look at abortion as an issue, it is no longer first and foremost. I think this is key. It's no longer first and foremost referred to as an issue of a woman's supposed right. I think there's been a lot of ground gained on the fact that the issue is the status of that unborn human life. And once the status, the moral status of that life becomes the focus, it's very hard for people to say, oh, it's really just a woman's choice. It's not a woman's choice to murder her neighbor. It's not any individual's choice to commit homicide. How is it that just being in the womb, unwanted, all of a sudden renders one's life of no importance? That just doesn't fit with the American people. It doesn't fit the American mind. There are so many other things going on here, too, just in terms of technology and the way that the whole equation has changed. There is what some people are calling the Roe effect. James Taranto at the Wall Street Journal talks about this. This is a generation that looks around and sees people missing because of abortion. 50 million Americans, 50 million aborted since 1973. That's a lot of folks who aren't here. The weight of that had better land on us all, weigh on us heavily. Here's just another factor. You got not only the fact that there are missing people in a generation that recognizes the missing, you also have the fact, and this is Taranto's point, writing at the Wall Street Journal, that if you are pro-abortion, you are far more likely, well, let me put it this way, you're far less likely to actually produce children who are going to follow you in a pro-abortion conviction, which is to say, to flip the coin the other way, if you're pro-life, you're a lot more likely to be having kids who are also going to be pro-life. Let's put it this way. Abortion's a lousy way to build a political movement. Let's just put it bluntly. And so abortionists are wondering, you know, where are all the young people supporting abortion? Well, you aborted a lot of them. That's where. And again, that's just another reminder that that God has created a world, a universe that has moral meaning, and that moral meaning shines through in some very unexpected ways, even ways that that reveal through tragedy a moral insight we desperately need to hear, a moral truth we desperately need to see. We've got callers on the line. We're going to get to those calls when we come right back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We're asking the question on the pro-life issue, on the question of abortion, is the tide coming in or is the tide going out? Is America becoming a more pro-life nation? There is good reason to believe that it is. There's good reason to think there is hope. But there is also ample incentive to understand that this is a long war, not a short battle, and we've got a lot of ground to recover. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're glad to hear from you as you join the discussion about the question, is America becoming a more pro-life nation? That's the issue. Is the tide coming in or is the tide going out? I think there's good reason for hope. Perhaps, almost assuredly, far more reason for hope now than even in the year 1973. And that is one of the biggest issues out there in this culture. And the fact that it is tells you a great deal. The issue was not put to bed by the Supreme Court in 1973. As a matter of fact, Americans are far more ready to talk about the meaning of human life in terms of the abortion question in the year 2010 than they were in 1973. American evangelicals were asleep at the switch when that Supreme Court decision was handed down. I dare say there are very few evangelicals ready to even have an informed, intelligent conversation about abortion. That's changed. And it has really changed when you look at younger people. One of the issues that World Magazine raises is that evangelical young people are being reached with pro-life messages, at least partly on college campuses. And that's good, too. There's a lot going on here at Facebook and also Twitter. Some very interesting stuff at Twitter. I received this message. Michael wrote to say America is becoming more pro-life, but softer pro-life. He says we are more sure abortion is wrong, but less sure why, you know. That gets Michael to the fact that an awful lot of Americans are moral intuitionists. They have a moral intuition of what's right and wrong, and I'm thankful. I think your point's very well taken. I'm thankful that their intuitions are moving in the right way. But their minds are going to have to come with them if they're going to understand how to translate that into meaningful action and advocacy. Daniel wrote saying that it's an advance just to take the public money out of abortion. You know, that gets back to the Hyde Amendment, named for the late Representative Henry Hyde of Illinois, and that's very, very much at stake, by the way, in terms of the health care reform legislation, something we have to watch very, very carefully, that there's no retreat at all from the Hyde Amendment. By the way, the Stupak Amendment appears to go even further than the Hyde Amendment, which would be something we should be thankful for. We'll be watching that. Jeffrey writes, asking the question, should we ever vote for candidates who are not solidly pro-life? I haven't come to a conclusion about this issue. I'm wondering where you stand. You know, Jeffrey, that's complex. I'll put it this way. I could never vote for a candidate whose election to office would be a setback rather than an advance for the pro-life cause. I think it's that important. And I stated that very carefully. For instance, right now, Scott Brown running for the U.S. Senate seat in Massachusetts, he is not pro-life in the way that I believe he should be. But he has pledged to vote in a pro-life way, voting for outlawing partial birth abortions, voting for all the pro-life issues related to, for instance, parental notification laws, and voting against any health care legislation that would not include full protection for human life. So if I look at that, I'm saying, look, I wish his heart was in a position, I wish it were in a position where it was solidly, consistently, self-consciously pro-life. But right now, I'm electing him to vote. And if he's going to vote in the right way, then yes, I will vote for him. I would if I had the opportunity. But when it comes to voting for someone whose election would net be a negative in terms of the advance on the pro-life cause, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. Now, the complexity comes down to this. What about, for instance, in terms of party politics, where you need, say, 60 votes in the Senate to be able to push things through, and does it make a difference whether you have a majority in the party that is pro-life, and does that mean you have to elect some who are not pro-life? You know, that got to an issue with Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island. no longer a senator. He was a pro-abortion or not pro-life Republican senator. And the case is being made by many Republicans. You got to support him. You got to vote for him because if you're pro-life, you got to keep the Republicans in the majority. You know, I'll tell you, that's not a stupid argument, but it's not a clincher argument as folks, I think, from state to state and district to district are beginning to understand. It's not irrelevant, but long term, that's no way to make a significant advance in the pro-life cause. But you just have to understand that in a fallen world, all politics is not only local, all politics is temporary in the sense that you're making a judgment between who's better in that role and that office now, even if it means you have to have someone who is a lot less than what you want on the way to getting what you need. Boy, politics in a fallen world really does get complicated. But again, the bottom line for me is I can never vote for anyone whose election would be a setback for the pro-life cause. Never. Let me go to Lois listening on KWXI, calling from Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Go ahead, Lois.
Hello. I think the pro-life movement is getting stronger because of the partial birth abortion issue. I think when people started hearing the words of what goes on for partial birth abortion, regardless of if they've ever seen a picture of an unborn baby, just the description of the procedure is horrible.
Go ahead, Lois.
People actually hear it put into words, they can't go that far with it.
You know, Lois, that is an excellent point. And along with the words are images. The American people, during the partial birth abortion controversy, and by the way, not that it's over, but at least in terms of the Supreme Court dealing with the issue and Congress dealing with the issue, the American people not only heard the words of what happens when a fully formed, full-term human baby is partly delivered and then murdered before being fully delivered. When they heard the words and they saw the images, the American heart was pierced. There's just no doubt about it. Now, I wish the American mind had already been there, but it wasn't. And we are complex creatures, and it happens that in terms of reaching the public, the heart often precedes the mind. And that certainly happened on the partial birth abortion issue. And you're exactly right, Lois. I think looking back, there's no doubt that over the last 15 years, that has been one of the deciding issues in terms of changing the American mind or the minds of many Americans on the issue of the sanctity of human life. And it is because, again, it makes no sense. It's just like we were talking about with the homicide issue. How can it be homicide over here and just a woman's choice without any great moral or even legal significance, according to Roe v. Wade, over here? And then at the same time, you've got this going on in terms of the partial birth abortion issue. You realize it's a pure legal fiction that this is not a homicide that is legal to be actionable as premeditated murder. All it means is they don't let the baby's head be completely emerged from the womb before they use those sharp instruments to bring about the baby's death. You know, Americans have enough moral sense. Just be thankful for this. This is by God's gift of common grace. There's still enough moral sense in the American people to know that that is just tragically, almost unspeakably, indescribably wrong. And then the logic immediately precedes from there. Well, then if that's wrong, then at what point is abortion supposedly right? That's where the pro-life position has to start at the moment of conception and go all the way until natural death. We have to hope Americans are getting there. Right back with more. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back. I love intelligent listeners. Someone called to say, be careful, you're talking about homicide. Not every homicide's a murder. That's true. Every murder is a homicide, but not every homicide is a murder. The point about the pro-life cause is this. We need for the homicide of an unborn baby to be recognized for the murder that it is. And that's where we need to get to the point where America's moral reflexes understand that every single human life, at every single point of development, is worthy of all legal protection. Because every single human being is made in the image of God. There are some places we can begin. I think it's very good that most children just assume that they were made, that they're not an accident. I think it's really good that by God's common grace, and most people look in the mirror or close their eyes at night, they really can't believe they're accidents. I think it's really, really good that we have a young generation that has grown up seeing those ultrasound images taped to the refrigerator door. No one's going to be able to tell them that that brother or sister unborn was any less human than they are now. I'm very, very thankful that America's conscience has been pricked on several issues and transformed in many ways in terms of thinking about this issue, so that the partial birth abortion ban and federal funding issues and any number of other controversies have stirred the American mind and reached the American heart. I'm very thankful for that. I am thankful for the fact that God has given us some time on this issue. And when you consider the judgment that would befall a nation that would murder its own unborn, just consider that. And I'm very, very thankful that the United States Supreme Court was spectacularly incompetent in 1973 in doing what it said it wanted to do, which was settle the issue. I'm thankful the American mind is not settled on this issue. I wish the United States Supreme Court in 1973 had had the legal and moral sanity to recognize abortion for what it is. But that not being the case, I'm thankful that America did not take the lead of the Supreme Court in following into that kind of confusion and tragic illogic. I'm thankful that the American mind is in motion on this, and my hope is that it's in motion in the right direction. The World Magazine cover story here on the 37th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision shows babies in baskets on a tide. And the fact that it is a baby makes all the difference in the world. That's where the American mind and the American heart are being reached most effectively, is by piercing the argument that the inhabitant of the womb is anything other than a baby. Folks, this is important for our discussion. You'll find a link to this cover story at World Magazine at the website, the page for today's program. By the way, I'd encourage you to look to World Magazine for outstanding evangelical coverage of Christian worldview analysis as well. Folks, we'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller program. We'll be talking about what you want to talk about. Email me your question. Send your question by social media, Facebook or Twitter. And most importantly, get ready to call tomorrow. We'll talk about what's on your mind. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'll meet you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.